Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Many of us tend to think about food insecurity around the holidays, but for a significant percentage of our community, food insecurity is a year-round phenomenon. In fact, the need actually goes up in the summer when children who receive free and reduced lunches at school are at home. For others, mobility and transportation is the issue. If you live in a food desert without access to grocery stores and nutritious food, have no effective way to get one, you're food insecure. This affects some seniors and those on fixed incomes. The Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma stepped up over the years to help alleviate hunger. Today, they provide nearly 350,000 meals a week throughout northeastern Oklahoma and offer innovative food programs like a culinary center to minimize food waste, mobile food trucks that go offer free meals in centers of food insecurity. The bank also works with Tulsa Public Schools and the library system to feed children in the summer and offers free family farmers markets at Educare and CAP Tulsa sites throughout the summer. Joining us to talk about the work of the food bank is the executive director of the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma, Eileen Bradshaw. During her 4 years at the helm, the food bank has increased their distribution by over 40%. Today, they distribute more than 21.6 million pounds of food a year. And she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Eileen Bradshaw, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Everyone is aware of the great work the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma is doing for feeding the hungry here in our area. But, you know, I think a lot of times people think of it as being a fall and winter issue when, in fact, the needs actually go up in the summer. Why do the needs go up in the summer?
Well, you're right. I think a lot of people focus on hunger during the holidays, and we're grateful for that. But summer is probably the toughest time, not only for the hungry, but for the organizations that try to serve them. There's a lot of different reasons. You know, people, when their routines change, they're traveling or whatever, they might forget to send in a donation that they would typically do. When kids are out of school, families' grocery budgets go up. I mean, that's across all income segments. I read a study that the average family's grocery budget goes up $300 a month when the kids get out of school. And I recall that with my own children. If you have that $300 to spend, it's sort of an inconvenience. But for many families that are already struggling, you can't just go spend another $300. And so it's really a tricky time. A lot of our kids here in Tulsa ate breakfast and lunch at their school for reduced or no cost. When you take two of the three meals away that they're being served, it really puts a squeeze on families.
Now, for a long time, the only way to reach those families during the summer was, you know, food pantries and depending on them to basically seek help. It sounds like one of the things the food bank has been doing is being far more proactive in offering places and ways in which you can reach out to those families.
We're really trying, and we have a lot of partners in this. You referenced the fact that food pantries have long been sort of the saving grace for families. That still happens. A lot of our partners are giving out many, many more meals over the summer months to these families. We also work with the federal program through Tulsa Public Schools. TPS operates over 60 federal sites in the city of Tulsa, trying to make sure that those kids that eat breakfast and lunch at school don't go without in the summer. So the food bank offers 16 of those sites, and we do ours kind of in a mobile method, and we kind of are able to travel and go into areas where maybe there's not a local partner and we can take that food in. So low-income housing, we have some churches that participate. And this year we have the three big libraries participating, which we're really excited about.
Explain how that works during the summer. For most people, they probably never had any interaction. How does it work? Do you set up a mobile hotline, or what do you do?
Well, you can go on Tulsa Public Schools website or the food bank's website, and there's a directory of summer feeding sites. And there's no paperwork to fill out. Any child 18 or under is eligible, so they don't question, you know, what is your family's income? Do you have a utility bill? Because it's hard enough to be a child in poverty without having to prove that you're poor. You know, that just doesn't seem like a good plan. So anybody can go to these summer feeding sites, and they'll be served a meal. They're in Tulsa. They're cold meals, but they follow the MyPlate guidelines, so they're healthy, and they always have milk and fruit. It's a really nice meal, and it's a real injection of kind of hope and nutrition to kids that need it.
So do you set up in the community room,
and we're in the regional library, so Rudisill, Zero, and Martin. And that's to me, such an ideal setting because kids can go in, do the summer reading program, eat lunch. It's cool. It's air-conditioned. One of the librarians told us that they have some kids in the summer who really spend the whole day at the library, almost as an ad hoc daycare. And sometimes those kids wouldn't go home for lunch and, you know, they knew they weren't eating. So this is really a great partnership that we're excited about.
Now, what happens at the school sites? I know there's a number of school sites.
There are some schools that are open, and then the summer school uses this program. So at the school sites, they'll serve out of the kitchens. At apartments, a lot of times it's a community room. We have been, there are health guidelines. Obviously, we have to keep the meals to temperature and all of that. But within those health guidelines and hand washing stations, we can fit into a lot of tiny places. And part of the program is that somebody is there with the children that they sit and eat the meal. So we always have folks to stay and make sure that there's something going on that the kids want to do.
Yeah. And I know at the libraries, it's sort of you're combining summer reading with summer feeding. Are you seeing an increase in numbers, in the number of people you're feeding during the summer?
Yes, we are. And we're really excited about that. You know, it's interesting. When we started partnering a few years ago, I think that we were very, the food bank, meaning myself and some of the staff that are working on this, I think we were kind of naive. And I think we thought, wow, you know, we really can move the needle on this pretty easily. And we found that it's a little more challenging. You'd think kids who are hungry, they need food. How hard can it be? But, you know, we had one site a couple of years ago where there was an apartment manager walking these children over to a church every day, and there was a stabbing in the apartment complex. And suddenly,
nobody came.
Mm. Weather, you know, you can imagine pouring rain, blazing heat, it affects it. And for some children who are maybe in that 12 or 13-year-old range, their parents might be at work. They don't have them in daycare, but they don't want them out and about. So it's really as close as we can get to these kids in terms of apartment complexes or neighborhoods or Boys and Girls Clubs. The closer we can get, the more effective it'll be.
Do you still run into the mentality, and I would assume you do, in Oklahoma, because we have such a strong work ethic, and a lot of these kids are working poor, the families are working poor, that they don't want to accept help?
Yes, absolutely. We do run into that, and we run into parents even during the school year that say, you know, I don't want to fill out that free and reduced lunch form. My child doesn't need it. And I admire that chutzpah and that grit. But, you know, we want those kids to have all the nutrition.
But a lot of times the kids are not eating.
That's right. And they're not eating, or they're eating, but they're not eating healthfully because healthy food's expensive. And so we know that so many outcomes are tied to nutrition. And, you know, Oklahoma has still a pretty high school dropout rate. We have a low college graduation rate. I can't swear to you that it's all going back to nutrition, but I do think that the high food insecurity rate just plays into those other rates that we're not so proud of.
Yeah. And can you talk about the high food insecurity rate in eastern Oklahoma? I mean, Tulsa itself and outside. I mean, a lot of times we can be kind of Tulsa-centric, but, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of areas in the state, especially southeastern Oklahoma, and a lot of places in eastern Oklahoma where the poverty rate is just extraordinarily high.
It's very true. And so statewide, about 17% of Oklahomans are food insecure. And food insecure is sort of an inside baseball term, but it basically means you may or may not get your next meal and you don't know where it's coming from. So you or I might go home and we don't know if we're going to cook or go out or whatever, but we know that if we want a meal, we've got it. And those who are food insecure just don't have that to count on.
There may not be anything at home. There may be no money to buy anything.
And there may be nobody to even ask.
Yeah.
So 17% of Oklahomans are food insecure. About 35% of those are kids. One out of every four Oklahoma children is classified as food insecure, which, you know, is just, it's tragic. We can do better than that. I really do believe that. And as you said, you know, Tulsa, what hunger looks like in Tulsa County, it's a real issue and it affects a lot of folks. I think depending on which statistic you read, about 75% of Tulsa public school kids are eligible for free and reduced lunch, which is really an enormous amount. Many, many schools are 100% free and reduced eligible. So in Tulsa, the challenges tend to be more around food deserts in urban communities mm-hmm. and access to nutritious food. Because in a lot of neighborhoods, the only food is at a convenience store where they're charging four times what you or I would pay at a grocery store. and accepting SNAP benefits. But because of transportation challenges,
I'm glad you brought up transportation challenges. How does the mobility issues affect a lot of these families as far as being able to get, be able to buy they don't have a station wagon to fill up with groceries, even if they had the money to do that. What do mobility issues play into this?
Mobility issues are a huge challenge to folks in poverty, because if they have a car, quite often it's not as reliable. And the bus system, while I know we're making real strides and we're excited about what's going on with the vision package, it's still, there's a lot of hours a day it doesn't run, and it's very difficult to get, I can't even imagine getting on a bus. I had three children and trying to take them to the grocery store and then carry the groceries home. I mean, it's mind-numbing, and yet there's families that have to do that all the time.
Yeah, oftentimes if you're up on North Peoria or some areas, you'll see folks walking alongside the road with a wagon.
Yes.
With groceries or
strollers,
a little cart.
Grocery carts.
Yeah.
And they have to get however far that grocery store is, they have to take that very rudimentary form of transportation. And it always scares me, because sometimes you'll see them walking in a line like ducks, and little kids are all carrying, and I appreciate everybody pitching in, but that's hard. It's really hard. And you mentioned rural. The issues in rural Oklahoma are severe, as you mentioned. Southeastern Oklahoma is particularly hard hit. We just actually had a big rural Oklahoma hunger survey commissioned, and the results were just really tragic. And they've got kind of a combined problem. They've got income issues, and so there's poverty. They've also got access issues, because in some cases, especially with seniors, there are folks that own a home, they really can't leave that community. Their grocery store closed. Now driving's becoming an issue for them because they're in their 80s or 90s. There's no public transportation. And so even if they have money, there's not really a good way for them to go spend it on anything healthy. So
let me in a way, if you live in a little small community, your grocery store closes, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're going 10, 15, maybe 20, 25 miles down the road to the super center of a certain sort, where it's a large supermarket. And if you don't have transportation, you're dependent on your community, basically.
Absolutely.
Your support community. I think that would put an enormous burden on faith communities and what small social services there are in these communities.
It does. And our partner programs in these rural communities are really heroes. Because they go way above and beyond. The poverty in the rural areas is really hard, because so many of those folks do own their homes. Maybe they inherited it from somebody, but, owning a home is a big deal. And people say, well, just leave and go get a job. Well, if the housing portion isn't taken care of, it's kind of scary to move to Tulsa or Oklahoma City and say, I know I can go find work. So it's a very complicated social system also. And there's a lot of poverty in the elderly and disabled in those communities that are kind of rooted there, and so we have to come up with an infrastructure to serve them.
In urban areas, we're talking more about community gardens as a way to get mm-hmm. fresh fruits and vegetables into a community, but certainly in a lot of those rural areas in the past, rural location, you have a garden, mm-hmm. and it provides a lot of sustenance, not only during the summer, but canning and through the like. Are those skills still going on in rural Oklahoma?
Really interesting.
I grew up with a large garden, in my mm-hmm. backyard, and we canned every summer.
Well, and it's very trendy now, right? I mean,
yes.
Gardening and canning is very trendy with young folks now, but we are seeing, a pretty big decline in the rural communities in that, because so many of the, not all by any, this is a generalization, but so many of the younger, more able-bodied folks have gone elsewhere to find work. And so the folks, that had gardens, if they're now in their, 80s, it's very difficult for them to do that and maintain it. So there's certainly lots of folks there that are able-bodied. But what we hear from the communities is that the gardens are there, but not nearly in the number that they used to be.
Mm-hmm. My guest today is Eileen Bradshaw, the executive director of the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma. The needs go up in the summer for the community food bank. They're serving not only the same amount of people they're serving during the fall and winter, but they're actually serving more, because they're serving a huge youth population with breakfast and lunch, taking up slack from free and reduced lunches for the public schools, and also just helping a lot of people during the summer when the kids are home and food bills go up. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, if we can talk a little bit about I know one of the things the food bank does is sort of just try to dispel some of the stereotypes about food insecurity. What are the stories you tell to folks about the stereotypes that exist out there?
Well, you know, there's a lot of data gathering between Feeding America and all of our partners and the food bank. And what we have found over and over again is that there are very few able-bodied working folks who are not working, who are depending on charitable food assistance. Most of the households that receive food assistance have at least one working adult. And it's not that they're looking for, you know, something glamorous. It's just that the wages are such that they can't pay for housing, food, and transportation.
We have a lot of minimum wage working adults in
the
state.
Tons in Oklahoma. We do. And most of the households that we serve contain children. For some folks, food assistance is a bridge. You know, if you get laid off, it's really wonderful to be able to get some help with food, you know, keep your car rolling, get out an interview. And we see lots and lots of folks like that. They come in, they need some help, they get back on track, and a lot of times they'll send us a letter or they'll send a check. I got a check a couple of weeks ago with a note saying, "You helped me when I needed it. Thanks." And, you know, we do hear those stories. We have some folks, particularly the elderly, their earning years are over. They're on a fixed income. And if they need help now, it is conceivable that they're going to continue to need help. They're people that work their whole lives. One of the women that we help at a senior servings location was an RN for years. She, you know, saved what she could. She supported her mother and three children. And she has some income now, but it's minimal. And she needs the extra food help. We see lots and lots of adults that are, like, one woman that we deal with is a swing shift manager for a fast food restaurant. And so she has daycare. I can't even imagine trying to arrange swing shift daycare. That sounds terrible. But she does it, and she's also going to school. I think she said that last year she had to get food assistance three times, which I think it's kind of amazing. Not that she had to get food assistance three times, but that it was only three times,
right?
Given what, you know, what she makes and what she's trying to get accomplished. She'll be fine, but she needs that help right now.
Yeah, and I'd assume it sounds like a majority, other than the elderly, is pretty much transitory. You see them for a few months, and then they're off food assistance.
It's human nature that we kind of focus on the folks that we see all the time, and they stick in our heads, right? So it seems like, wow, we have these people coming all the time. But really, when you look at the data, I used to work at one of our partner programs, and when we ran the data, anecdotally, we thought, oh, everybody's coming probably four times a year. When we ran the data, it was 1.2 times. Most people don't want to take more than they really need. And as compassionate and loving as most of our partner programs are, and as the food bank tries to be, having to get food that you didn't pick out, often having to stand in line, you know, filling out information about yourself, we try to make sure that all of this assistance is delivered with dignity, but it isn't fun. And I just think that most people, if they have a way to get food other than that, aren't going to take advantage of the system, because it's just not something that you're going to do if you don't really need it.
Yeah. Now, when you're dispensing food, I think a lot of people think of food drives, and it's always cans, it's boxes, it's processed food. But I know one of the big trends for the food bank is to, yes, you still have this, but to get fresh vegetables, fresh meats. What has been the success with that?
Well, we're working really hard to make sure that the product that we have to distribute is as healthy as possible. That being said, you know,
a lot of cans.
We get a lot of cans. We get right. We just got two trailer loads of crackers. We're not going to turn those down. We're grateful for it. But when we can go to acquire things, whether it's purchasing or really targeting donors, we do try to get as healthful a product as possible. Last year, we distributed about 21.6 million pounds, and just over 30% of that was fresh produce.
That's great.
We really have worked hard at that, because that is the thing that people identify as the first thing to go when their grocery budget shrinks. You know, produce is expensive, and it's something that we all need to be healthy. It used to be that people might need food assistance and they'd go down the road. But, you know, if you think about the fact that we have free farmers markets at Head Start sites, and that's all produce, and it's putting it into homes where there's young children hoping to develop those habits, but also kind of injecting good nutrition in those homes. It's really critical for their development. I mean, Oklahoma's health outcomes aren't the greatest either. And so as the Charitable Food Assistance Network, you know, if all we do is ramen, then we're contributing, even though it may be calories that keep you going, we're ultimately contributing somewhat
to obesity issues,
right, and hypertension. So we really are mindful to try to make our product as healthful as we can afford.
Now, one of the things the food bank is doing is not only soliciting, you know, individuals to give in food drives, mm-hmm. to give financial assistance where you purchase food, but also trying to eliminate what has been a big problem in America, food wastage, from not only from grocery stores, but also from restaurants. What are the efforts of the food bank to sort of capitalize on food that's either going to be thrown out in the garbage or, you know, maybe distributed to the needy? Talk about your food wastage programs with the
We've really kind of doubled down on that. Our food bank was the first one in the country to be constructed with a commercial kitchen. And so that's a big part of how we address waste, because if you get a call on a Friday afternoon that there's a load of tomatoes available, but you have to take it that day, and they're on the cusp, you know, distributing them Monday and Tuesday probably isn't an option. So, you know, the chefs can get in there with volunteers and they can make those. They can either just blanch and freeze them, or they can make pasta sauce. I mean, they can make things happen with those. Same thing with restaurant pickups. You know, I'm super proud of our chefs. I think they're amazing. It's like being on Chopped every day. They don't know what they're going to have in front of them, and they have to come up with something good. And so it's a little like recombinant DNA. They may pick up rice from one restaurant and prime rib ends from another, and then they might have some produce. And so they come up with these really nutritious, quite often casseroles, and they'll go out. We have two food trucks, sort of like taco trucks, and they go out and they serve meals to folks for free in low-income areas where we know there's high food insecurity. Just in the 2 weeks between the time school ended and the summer feeding program began, they served 3,000 meals to kids out of school, just, you know, on things that would have been thrown. I mean, and it's good food. It's healthy. It's not past its prime, but it would have ended up in a landfill 10 years ago.
And when you're talking about restaurant pickups like that, mm-hmm. you're talking about food that's already been processed and prepared in a way.
According to, you know, health code, if it hasn't been set out on a buffet or on somebody's plate, you know, if it's been prepared in the kitchen and hasn't been served, then we can pick that up. And it can be, you know, served, and we get some wonderful donations from the restaurant community. And it, you know, again, food that would have been thrown away, it's really now going to answer a problem. And the grocery store piece you mentioned is also amazing. That's the fastest growing food donation stream in the country. So I think it used to be that grocers were really nervous about having their product out there, and did we know how to handle it safely? Did our partners? So, but they've really, there's been a lot of back and forth communication and training.
So what was the education process in convincing grocers?
Well, it's a lot of conversation. And I will say Feeding America did a lot of that at the national level. So for national chains like Walmart, those conversations happened between Feeding America and Walmart. You know, locally, Resource is a local partner, and they were an early adopter of donating to the food bank. We have lots of great grocery partners here. And we pick up things that are... you know, when you mentioned like package and cans, we can pick up those things when they're close to out of date. But we get a lot of good meat, and we get a lot of produce and bakery from all of these sources. And when you think meat is the hardest thing for the food bank to come by, and it's frankly easier for a grocer to throw it away. You know, they just throw it away and they're done with it. If they donate it to us, what they need, they have to go pull it all, put it in a freezer, and we pick up maybe 3 days a week, so they have to hold it for a day. So I really want to give them credit, because there's a movie, I can't remember the name of it, Dive or something, where there's a grocer being interviewed saying about how he donates everything to the hungry, and then it shows the guys in the back door putting all the food in the dumpsters. There's a real disconnect sometimes. But we really do not see that here in Tulsa. The grocers, and throughout our service area, the grocers and the grocery stores really seem to have embraced this idea. And they take extra steps to make it happen.
Man, you know, it's just before you throw food away, does anybody need it? You know,
right.
You know, whether it can be sold or not. Hopefully it's sold from the grocer's point
right,
of view.
Right, absolutely.
But
if not.
Yeah. And it sounds like the grocers are fairly well on board here in the
They've
community.
Been great. And we've trained in communities outside of Tulsa. A lot of times we're kind of the matchmaker. So We've made the relationship with the grocer. We have a partner program, that community, and they pick up directly from the grocer. We train them. We give them like freezer blankets and temperature gauges, and so that the grocer and the public can assure that it's been handled safely the whole way.
Now, you're talking about the health department regulations. Mm-hmm. I know the Tulsa City County Health Department is one of the more stricter, but of course, all throughout eastern Oklahoma, every, I guess, county health department has their own set
of different, right?
Little regulations. Is that a difficult thing to navigate?
I think it's probably easier on us because our base being in Tulsa, we are used to working on the strictest guidelines, so we just use that universally. I think it would be really hard if we were in a county that was lax and then try to adapt that. So I feel pretty fortunate that way. And most of like the cooking, the kitchen operation is all in Tulsa. So, you know, we only have that one set of guidelines.
While the guidelines are strict, are they fair? I mean, are we not missing out on opportunities?
I think that we're very well protected by the Tulsa City County Health Department. I think they're a great partner. One of the things that I didn't realize that was sort of specific to Tulsa is rotisserie chickens. You know, we see them in the grocery store. In Tulsa, they can only be under those lights for 4 hours. And I have a friend in Chicago, and she said, you know, she thinks that it's like 14 hours there. I mean, it's a big difference. So we're well protected here. But that is ends up being a good source of protein because a lot of those grocers then will pull those and donate them to the food bank.
Yeah. Now, as we mentioned, my guest is Eileen Bradshaw, the executive director of the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma. This summer, they'll be feeding a lot more people than normal, a lot of children who are out of school, many of which are on free or reduced lunch. They're picking up the slack for those kids during the summer. And so they're busy feeding people, but they also have a challenge this summer, I guess, the Helmer Challenge. Tell me a little bit about this Helmer Challenge.
Well, we're really excited about it. As I mentioned earlier, summer's sort of the perfect squeeze. Need goes up, donations typically go down. And so the Helmer Foundation heard about that, and they stepped up and said, you know, we'll match any donations up to $75,000, which goes a really long way. We can provide 4 meals for every dollar donated. So if you think about the impact of $150,000, it's pretty major.
Yeah. How far along are you on that goal?
Well, I think we just had it announced, so we're probably about a third of the way there as of yesterday's mail. not micromanaging, but about a third of the way there. So there's still room to help if people are interested.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with your work. It's very important work here in Tulsa. Eileen Bradshaw, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Eileen Bradshaw is the executive director of the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma. For more information about their work and how to help, visit their website at okfoodbank.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.